Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the Baseball Prospectus local site focusing on the Chicago White Sox. You can find this podcast on iTunes or on Blog Talk Radio or just download straight from our site. Search for the Catbird Speaks and you'll find it. If you want to support the podcast, you should find illegal means of acquiring our addresses and mail us straight cash. That's if you want. Joining us tonight, or early Friday morning, is Matt Adams in Arizona. Matt, please give your address and your bank routing number.
It's tonight for me in Chandler, Arizona. It's the best I can do.
And in Austin, Texas, Colin Whitchurch. Colin, social and favorite three colors would suffice.
If the Catbird Speaks after dark, we can do whatever we want, right?
Yes, because we totally don't just record it and then play it at normal times.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't work like that.
We are here at the very ass end of the White Sox season. Yet another ultimately pointless and kind of boring final month of what will be their ace straight season without a playoff berth, and really kind of a mortal lock at this point would be the four straight losing season. Four losing seasons for Rick Khan's tenure. The last two of which have been pretty much kind of unabashedly going for the playoffs, at least in terms of their public speak around their organizational direction. Even if, you know, they didn't build like preseason juggernauts that everyone picked and then underperformed, they kind of, you know, built the teams they built, which everyone was kind of like, eh, there's a chance, and then there wasn't. So at this point, beyond being kind of bored because Chris Sale, totally just got shelled by an awful Phillies lineup the other night and kind of ruined his Cy Young chances, what is your feeling about the organizational direction, guys? Because I have an idea.
Isn't it kind of insane? Like, I feel like we don't think about this as much anymore, especially because we've long come to grips with how bad this team is. But considering how much of a disappointment 2015 was, it was like, we went into 2016 thinking, okay, they made a few improvements. There's no way it can be worse than last year. And then they started 23-10, and they're probably, well, maybe not probably, but they have a really good chance of finishing with a worse record than they did last year.
It's not that good. Wasn't last year 76-86?
Yeah.
So they'd have to go 4-6 to match it.
Yeah, but I mean,
so they'd have to go 3-7 to be worse, and they play a really weak schedule.
Okay, maybe not a good chance, but it's not unfathomable that they finish.
It's not.
But especially considering what the disappointment was last year and the start to this season, they're going to be as bad in 2016 as they were in 2015. I can't stop thinking about that. That just seems unfathomable to me.
It still feels worse because, I mean, every year that you're still bad, it's like you're adding on. At some point, it's got to get better, and then when it doesn't, it sucks. And then Sequency really fucked us when they, you know, started out good or winning games anyways, even though we were all somewhat questioning it until the last minute and then had our heads bashed in. But that makes this season worse than the rest, pretty much, in my opinion.
I have a buddy who's a Blue Jays fan, and he randomly decided to pick out an episode of the podcast to listen to in May, a May episode, and he gives me shit at work all the time about that episode, and we were talking about how screwed the Indians are. Hey, things are looking up for the White Sox. This division is theirs for the taking. The Indians are in trouble. Brantley's not there. Carrasco just got hurt. And, yeah.
I don't find any humor in that, Colin.
I don't find any humor in it either. But I have to. So I'm recanting the story. Or retelling the story. And using wrong words to describe it.
Just tell this man, I live in Indiana, and I work weird hours, and I don't have a lot to lose. I can do, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in prison for assault. That's no thing.
It's actually the guy.
No thing.
It's the guy you met, Matt.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. He seems like he would give you a lot of shit about things.
Yeah.
I mean, they were in trouble. Like, no one knew, like, that Carrasco's injury wasn't that bad. And also, like, they now lost their 2 and 3 starters, and obviously they make the playoffs, and the White Sox, like, literally commit live animal sacrifices on the field to do that. But, I don't know, they're definitely, like, the weakest of the AL division winners going in by a lot.
And Paul Hoynes pissed off everyone by writing the season is over column last week in the Plain Dealer.
Yeah, which really wasn't like that. I mean, the tone was pretty like undemocratic, I guess, but like it wasn't like making false assertions or anything.
Yeah.
It's like Trevor Bauer has not been particularly good in the second half, and he's the number two starter.
Yeah, but you're just not supposed to speak poorly about the Windians.
Like, and them acting like he's afraid to go there. Like, that dude's been on that beat for, like, 2 decades or something, hasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, he's been there a long time.
Yeah, so he's seen a share of Indians' disappointments, so he feels pretty comfortable, I'm sure, putting these things out there.
That did not impress me from the team that I picked to finish above the White Sox at the start of the year in the BP predictions.
So I brought up the team's baseball reference page in preparation for I feel like Jerry probably is going to consider the season a success because it's going to be their 5th straight year of drawing fewer than 2 million fans.
That's more of like it's more of like a solace. Like I don't know, like if you don't.
No, I know.
It's not like the producers where he's like betting against the team to succeed. It's just like he's protected from having to like pay for a successful team if they're not successful, I guess. Yeah.
They went seven seasons in a row of drawing at least 2 million until 2012, and this is going to be the lowest. This is going to be the lowest attendance year since probably 02, or if it passes 02, then going back to 99.
And I don't know.
Let's shame the fans. That's what we do at this site, right? We shame.
I mean, they run 23 out of 33, and the fans were not camping out in front of games after that. And I think the players looked around and saw, you know, nothing, everything on this earth is condemned to die alone. Nothing matters. We're all rotting hunks of flesh, straddling slaughtered trees that we pulled from the earth purposefully in our mundane pursuit of meaning. And you know, maybe let's, you know, fuck up the series against the Indians. Who gives a shit?
So,
I think that's what they're thinking.
Prior to everything turning into dust, well, is there anything that can possibly be done? I mean, something can possibly be done. Is there anything you think will get done to make 2017 any different than 2016?
There could be. I don't know how much I want to flaunt that I don't have an inside, like, my finger on the pulse of what they're going to do. But, like, there's a lot of angst on, like, I mean, there's, like, I don't know, 3 options. One is that they, like, realize they have this core that they put in place. You have all, like, these guys you brought over, Laurie, like, with 2 years left, and Frazier with 2 years left, and Melky Cabrera has 1 year left, and David Robertson 1 year left, and think, we just need to add, you know, the right pieces on this. We can make something good and spend a lot of money. Not maybe a ton, but, you know, become like a, you know, top 10, top 15 payroll and make a decent, you know, wild card fringe division contender. That's one possibility, and by far seemingly the least likely to happen. The other one is, like, you know, adding some fringy veterans and hoping something pops and putting a bunch of wild card or lotto tickets at a bunch of positions right now. They're black holes and hoping that something clicks or Chris Sale wins 30 games. And then, like, the third possibility that a lot of people have talked themselves into of a total hard rebuild that, you know, I guess would show some direction and be good in that aspect, but also probably be extremely agonizing and painful to watch and ultimately unnecessary and result in a lot of awful, awful baseball and horrible losing and 100-loss seasons and all that shit. You know, the stuff that's, you know, that smart teams do.
So what do you think is the most likely of those three scenarios?
The second one.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I don't know if they're gonna bring back Han. I haven't heard anything about them possibly getting rid of him. You know how loyal Jerry is, but I feel like there's a chance that that if they get rid of him, Jerry's going to bring in a new GM, whoever it may be, and be like, build a contender and then have the same financial constraints. And we're just going to be playing out the same motions over and over again of them trying to get creative with trades and trade from depth to get players like Frazier and Samardzija 2 years ago. And nothing's going to change unless they are actually willing to spend money. It doesn't matter who's running the team, who the GM is or anything. If they can't spend money, it's just going to be playing out the same string of events over and over again.
I mean, what was their payroll ranking in 2011 when they spent money? Or was it 2010 when they were all in? I mean, what was their ranking at that point when they were purporting to be throwing all
2011 was all in, man.
Yeah, so what was their ranking? What was their... were they like they were spending relative to the league a pretty good amount of money at that time, right?
Hang on, I found something that in 2011 opening day payroll they were fifth in baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
$129 million behind only the Angels, Red Sox, Phillies, and Yankees.
So evidently Reinsdorf is able to okay something of that nature. The problem is he hasn't eclipsed that amount since then. He almost did this year, and so Didn't some trades save him from going over the mark for this year?
I mean, most of the time this is ranked off of opening day payrolls.
Yeah.
So, if we want to, like, we could add, like, Shields and all that to this current thing, but that would also kind of muddy the waters as far as looking back and assessing what those payrolls actually were.
Their opening day payroll in 2016, according to this website, which I just realized I have no idea if it's a legit site or not. Their opening day payroll this year was 20th in baseball, behind the Mets and ahead of the Brewers. Behind the Twins.
I remember it being 16th, but I'm not on, you know, bonkersbaseballdollars.com or whatever.
I should cite my sources. This is the first thing that popped up when I googled MLB payrolls, and it's stevetheump.com.
SEO for Steve.
It has every salary stats going back to 1967, though. This is kind of insane.
That sounds like something that's easily archived and found by Steve. Pro tip, just don't extraneously type XXX at the end of all your Google searches, like Colin Cleary has done here. It kind of, it can produce some weird results.
Yeah, I'm learning that.
Especially at the workplace. Oh my God, Steve the Ump was the first result for me, too. I just didn't click on it because it looked like craziness. Steve the Ump, then ESPN second. I mean, there's been some, you know, rumblings that, you know, things are not stable for Han and, you know, leadership, but it hasn't really accelerated as we're getting closer to the end of the season, which would, I don't know, be something that I would probably need to place much faith in something that uncharacteristically drastic happening. I would bet some more middle ground approach where there's some fallout with MLB scouting departments of the White Sox, which have kind of gotten thrown under the bus a little bit to the press. But obviously in the wake of the Shields trade and some of the other, you know, blunders of this acquisition season. but it, Han and the definitely like a huge overthrow of like leadership would definitely be like a believe it when I see it territory, especially here where we're not hearing anything that would suggest that's happening. I mean, I know the White Sox are close to the vest, but you know, there's based off no real strong indicators in the last few months. I'm not counting on it. I'm betting the guy who saw Shields' last start before they pulled the trigger might be in trouble. But then again, maybe the Padres were just, you know, screwing everyone over by, you know, maybe they stabbed Shields underneath the arena before, you know, put him on a plane in Chicago, like Gladiator or something.
They flew planes to Chicago on Gladiator?
Yeah, man. You need to buy the director's cut. Ridley Scott is like, he has a bunch of commentary on that.
You know, the Sox are not technically eliminated from wildcard contention yet, FYI.
Because the Orioles lost?
By the time anyone listens to this, they will be. But
their tragic number is one, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I know, like, when Hayes put it out the other night, he was talking about the Orioles being the team they're measured against, and the Orioles got pounded. So...
Yeah, put the damn Tigers back into a playoff spot as of this recording.
Yeah, well, technically there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams within 3 games that within 4 games of the entire thing. I guess Toronto's a game up in the league, but could be fun for everybody else in the league, just not the White Sox.
I think Adam Jones was saying something the other day, vaguely. Not attendance shaming, but more like attendance longing.
Yeah, actually, sort of shaming. I read his statements, and they were actually pretty, I mean, it was delivered by the media as more of a shaming thing, but he was really kind of diplomatic about it. And was also like, oh, I understand the ratings are very good, but we can't tell how many people are watching on TV. I just wish it was for more fans, not the whole, like, you should spend your money here things that we usually get from players.
I mean, he pointed out that they've had a good run, that they basically haven't had a losing season since 2011, which is like...
Yeah, they're kind of murdering all of the sustained success theories for attendance.
But they kind of like, I don't know, there's it's like, it's obviously a lot better than the White Sox have been, but it's kind of like White Sox-like success. Of just like, I mean, they had a legit great 96 win team that then... ran into the Royals thresher. But they've had a, like, they've had the streak based off like having a more often than not these middle 80 something win teams that didn't go to the playoffs that were kind of like in it till the end, but clearly hopelessly flawed, kind of like this team right now. I don't know, I could see myself being frustrated as an Orioles fan, but then again, as someone watching the White Sox, I don't know, that kind of frustration probably looks like luxury.
Yeah, I find it hard to have sympathy for too many teams when a third of the teams basically make the playoffs and the Sox haven't in nearly a decade now.
I first met my wife the summer that they last made the playoffs.
Ages
when I was still
ago.
In college. Yeah.
It was a whole different lifetime ago. The White Sox were good.
Yeah, that was my first year at EIU. My first year away at college.
I had a lot more echo in like my wardrobe rotation. I used to wear flip-flops to like gatherings of friends. And
you don't do that anymore?
Not so much. Mostly because it's the same to wear pair of flip-flops I've had since I was 18, and they make really loud, crinkly noises when I walk now. I can't be sure that there were not jean shorts in the rotation of some kind.
Echo and jean shorts.
They were Echo jean shorts for sure.
I'd laugh harder, but I definitely had a pair of Echo jean shorts.
I mean, my only hope is that, you know, the White Sox front office listens to this and thinks, holy shit, Echo jean shorts. We gotta accelerate the timeline here on ending this playoff cap.
Well, it'll be fine next year. The curse of Obama will be lifted, and yeah. They'll be walking right into the playoffs.
He might come to more games next year.
Is that what this is? It's an Obama curse?
I mean...
Yeah, ever since Obama took office. The Trump years are going to be very lucrative for the White Sox.
Oh, shit.
Outstanding. Yeah, I don't know. Hasn't won since the president administration was always a fun fact that I found amusing growing up, so I've been trying to trot out the whole Obama administration drought.
So I have... There's
no way you're not holding that vent right over the mic. You know, you can't play us all for saps all night.
Nowhere near it. Nowhere near it.
No one believes...
How do you think this goes on conference calls, Barney?
Yeah.
Not great.
Actually, nobody ever mentions it, because they're all much cooler people than you, James.
That makes me question things. Like, what's going on in my head?
Okay, so we don't have... Since we don't really have an agenda for this podcast...
I have an agenda. The third link on my browser shortcuts is still this, like, Japanese t-shirt with Diane Viciedo on it that I never bought.
Why didn't you buy it?
I don't know why. Maybe because I wasn't sure if I could, you know, figure out this clearly in Japanese online shop browser menu.
Get that translated.
Okay, what were you saying, Colin?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I have a list here of players the White Sox are definitely not signing this offseason, but yeah, are available.
So this is just the MLB trade rumors free agent list.
Yeah. Yeah, they're top 10. Let me phrase it. Interesting. Cespedes, Encarnacion, Reddick, Chapman, Jansen, Desmond, Bautista, Wilson Ramos. He's kind of interesting. Trumbo, and then 10th, they give it to Fowler and say Justin Turner, Michael Saunders are also in contention.
Kind of fine with them not signing most of those people anyways.
Yeah, see, that's... It's like, even if they're like, okay, let's spend some money for once, like, who's the... I mean, Yo would be awesome, obviously, for the second year in a row.
I'm kind of maybe... At the risk of being someone who... It's just like forever chasing that first month and a half of May of what their defense looked like. I think they need a center fielder. So by that measure, probably the truest center fielder would be Dexter Fowler, at least because he's playing it regularly. He's also going to be going on the other side of 30. I know Michael Saunders has been a center fielder in the past. I don't know if that's a viable path for him post stepping on sprinkler head knee injury. I would bet not. So I guess my question would be, presumably we don't want to stick Mark Trumbo in center field. What would be the best like center fielders available?
All right. Well, Desmond.
There is Desmond, who I'm pretty sure has been mostly dog shit in the second half.
There's Cam Maben.
That, I think he has a mutual option, or maybe even just a straight up deep option.
It's a nine.
They're gonna pick that up.
Oh yeah, I guess they probably.
They're not stupid.
There's Carlos Gomez.
That's not looking as stupid as it was a couple weeks ago, I guess.
He's the same age as Dexter Fowler, Andy and Desmond. There is Michael.
He's Ballmer. A better fielder than.
There's Dexter Michael Ballmer. There's Coco Crisp. There's Rajay Davis. There's John Jay.
These are all decent enough sounding fourth outfielders that I would not want to watch play 120 games.
Didn't Craig say when you guys had him on that he was?
Let's not pay attention to what Craig said. Okay.
he tweeted him.
Nothing nice to say.
I know he doesn't even follow me on Twitter. I'm calling you out, Craig.
Craig does not care about who is mad about him not following them on Twitter.
I know.
Ajay Davis, after being seeming like a speed guy who should like collapse on any moment, who keeps piling up like decent years for AL Central teams in his mid-30s, would definitely come to the White Sox and immediately collapse and never play again.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But then again, I'm breaking my rule again of like all White Sox free agency conversations become useless because we just embrace fatalism and realize that nothing will ever work.
What do you think about Wilson Ramos?
I refer to what James just said.
Yeah, that's fair.
What, fatalism?
Yep.
He is probably fine.
Ian Desmond is a 645 OPS in the second half. Mostly due to a terrible August. Decent July. But, yeah. Pretty uneven since.
He's totally uneven, because didn't he have a completely shit April?
Yeah, he started getting hot at the end of April, so it wasn't nearly as bad as his August.
I guess the main reason I bring up the free agents is because I feel like it's frustrating. Anytime we get into free agent possibility conversations, we do the fatalism thing, you're right, but I feel like a lot of us have resigned ourselves to, when talking about like top free agents, it's, oh, they're not going to do that anyway. They're not going to spend the money anyway. And that might be right, but that doesn't, I don't like being resigned to that. Like, we still need to talk about it, because it pisses me off that they're not willing to do that.
Like, give Fowler a below market deal to be like a great center fielder leadoff guy,
or overpay for something, you know?
If they just paid Fowler what he's projected to get, they would have like outbid the field by like $20 million.
Yeah,
and they'd be good or better.
Well, they use the money amongst a bunch of little ass pieces that all sucked anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, part of like not having minor league depth is kind of like needing to have like little veterans sprayed out everywhere to kind of cover up the fact that you probably couldn't call up like even your best AAA outfielder and get a 600 OPS. But yeah, it didn't seem. They should embrace the stars and scrubs approach more than they wind up doing. I mean, they kind of have a stars and scrub roster, but just like they're always going to do that because they don't have depth, but they stop pursuing stars at some point in free agency. And it does not pay off.
This free agent class is really depressing. I know that's been talked about already, but
you know, like when we were talking about last year's free agent class, like the one they needed to act on.
Yeah. The best pitchers on the market are going to be, after Rich Hill, is probably Jeremy Hellickson.
They really don't need a pitcher.
No, I know. I just, that was just a comment.
I mean, that's a nice part of it. And, you know, they don't have enough pitching depth that they can really, like, deal from it and take advantage of people who need pitching, but unless, I don't know, someone is, no, it's not even entertaining the idea that someone's going to trade for James Shields. That's really crazy.
Do you think the White Sox are going to pick up Matt Elbers' $3 million club option?
Somehow, I don't see it happening.
I don't think it happened. It shouldn't happen. There's no way it would happen. It's silly for us discussing why it would happen. But
they were on
wouldn't
the,
any other team have DFA'd him by now? Why is he still on the roster?
Yeah.
How do you know for sure he's not coming back?
Matt, you might have heard this on the Effectively Wild podcast where they were talking about whether every non-playoff team season could be viewed by the front office as a success or not.
Yeah.
When they were talking about Matt Albers' season line, Sam almost, like, lost his when you looked at his stats.
Yeah, because it's that laughable.
Yeah.
What happened? I love Sam, but I'm not a podcast.
It was an afterthought. they already talked about the White Sox, and then it just brought up how terrible Matt Albers is and still getting time to pitch.
Yeah.
I don't remember if they marked the arbitrary endpoint at that ERA, but or they said his ERA has blown up like 9 times to what it was. Or
it needs to hit 6 right now. He's pitched 50 innings.
It's insane.
I think they mentioned something about a save opportunity. When did you last get a save opportunity?
No, he had a save opportunity, and he finished off. I wish I could remember who it was against. He finished off the 8th and started the 9th in a game that they were way, way destined to lose. Like, there was no way it was going to end positively. It was a 1-run lead against, like, Texas or something. And then, yeah, he blew it immediately.
Fun team. Fun team.
He's had nothing for months. I don't get it. Like, how can I be sure that they think he's bad? I mean, they stop using him a lot, but they also, like, have September call-ups. Like, he's appeared in 2 games in September. Like, why was he so, like, determined to roster him?
He was fun for that 2 weeks.
It was a solid month.
His current photo on Baseball Prospectus is basically how I feel whenever I see him.
On May 9th, his ERA was 0.57. The next day, it went up. The next day, it went up to 2.20, and it has climbed ever since.
All right, let's play this game one more time for the rest of the year. He did not give up an earned run in his first 12 appearances. Since then, he's had 45 appearances. He's logged 37 2/3 innings. The White Sox have gone 18-27 in games he's appeared in. He's given up 57 hits, 34 earned runs. He's walked 16, struck out 21, given up 10 bombs, an 8.12 ERA. Opposing hitters are hitting 354, 414, 634 against him, or 1,048 OPS. He's hit 2 batters.
Isn't that basically like David Ortiz's stat line this year?
That's the MVP. The MVP is whoever's hitting against Matt Albers.
Matt Albers got a blown save as late as July 30th.
Hang on, James, read that stat line again. Hang on, I have it. 354, 414, 634. David Ortiz is hitting 318, 404, 632 for a 1036 OPS. So it's basically David Ortiz's season line against Matt Albers this year.
He's inherited 36 runners. He's allowed the majority to score.
Got to hear both sides, James. I'm not ready to shut him down.
Like, the league average is low 30s. He's at 56%.
Fucking like a cat.
Like, it's super, like, the games are meaningless. And I watch them, and I, like, especially when, like, there's no one, like, particularly worth watching playing, and I just, like, I feel my mind wandering to, like, these really obscure, absurd, pointless, like, little beefs. But the whole, like, let's pitch Chris Beck over Michael Ioanoa things, and let's just pitch Chris Beck all the time, or
Chris Beck pitches every fucking game, it seems like.
Like, it just starts eating. Or the pulling in the infield, like, all, like, multiple, so many times during the Shields start. Shields! Like, the worst starter in baseball who's getting hair left and right. What the hell are you pulling the infield in for? Like, first of all, like, trying to protect the single run, or the fact that, like, Shields not going to be giving up a rocket. It's, like, left and right, and you should stand back. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, so Robin Ventura. What about that?
Chris Beck has appeared in 10 games in the month of September already.
Yeah, like, he's blow for blow with Ioanoa as far as, like, appearances in the second half, which is unremarkable until you consider that, like, Beck was in the minors until, like, mid-August, and Ioanoa has been on the roster ever since he got called up, like, in the first half. I don't get it. Robin's contract is not been renewed and has been subject to nothing but, like, you know, whispers about his security, and had his star player, like, question the team's desire to win, however, like, much he didn't really intend to, like, make a big thing of it. I don't know. It wasn't, like, a good comment about, like, we're still super motivated and trying to, like, do everything to win. It definitely didn't reflect well on him. And he's had two major blow-ups with Chris Sale, not merely directed at him, but just kind of like a failure to, like, rein him in to some degree.
But he's going to have to leave on his own, right? Like, it's going to have to be his choice.
Robin? I mean,
you think?
I just don't see the straight dismissal. I know the contract situation makes it really easy for the team to say, okay, see you later, but...
I mean, couldn't
just have this terrible feeling. It's gonna have, if he wants to stay, he's gonna be allowed to.
Don't you think that there's probably a very likely scenario that it'll be, they'll basically tell him, like, hey, resign. Let's end this on good terms.
Doesn't have to resign.
Or I'm not resign, but like they'll say it's a mutual thing, even if they're like, hey, either say good. Let's end this amicably in public kind of thing, but we're not going to bring you back kind of things. Like, you really think that if he wants to stay, they're going to sign him to a new contract?
They're going to A-Rod him?
They fired his handpicked bench coach. I mean, I don't know, maybe they had their own issues with Parent. He doesn't seem like, you know, the most chill human who ever walked the earth, so... It might not have necessarily been a shot across the bow at Blake Ventura, but... There are still, like, all traditional things in place to suggest that this is a manager who's not coming back. It's just, like, the kind of, like, general doubt or angst that the White Sox kind of turgid movements and progress and slow to transition out of things that maybe outsiders feel aren't working is the only thing that would make us question this. I feel like I'm, you know, in Plato's cave at this point, just staring at a wall and convincing I see things.
It's a pretty deep cut right there, Jim Jam.
Well, I almost read a James Baldwin quote to talk about how I feel about, like, the April and early May about the White Sox 2016.
The pitcher?
No, not the pitcher.
Oh, okay.
I could read it if you want.
Yes, please do.
Perhaps everyone has a Garden of Eden. I don't know, but they scarcely see their garden before they see the flaming sword. Then, perhaps life only offers the choice of remembering the garden or forgetting it. Either or. It takes strength to remember. It takes another kind of strength to forget. It takes a hero to do both. People who remember court madness through pain. The pain of a perpetually recurring death of their innocence. People who forget court another kind of madness. The madness of the denial of pain and the hatred of innocence. And the world is mostly divided between madmen who remember and madmen who forget. Heroes are rare. And that's April 2016 would be the Garden of Eden. The rest of the season is the Flaming Sword. Or Matt Albers is the Flaming Sword.
I mean, you've written articles comparing the using Nietzsche quotes for the White Sox, so this doesn't really surprise me.
I just, like, there's just not much to draw from the game, so I just have to read books instead.
That's fair.
It's hard to watch the games. It's like...
It obviously is.
It's like you don't want to, but you can't not, and it's just... It's terrible. The White Sox are just a terrible entity.
I mean, I'm fine watching them. I just don't, like, what did I learn here today?
Yeah, it would be one thing if they were a team that was trotting out all these interesting young players at the end of the season where it's like, oh, well, let's see how they progress. And it's like, okay, we have Tim and we have Carlos.
And they've been here for most of the year, so there's nothing, like, particularly redeeming about September. As far as that goes.
Like, it's got to be more interesting to watch September baseball as a freaking Braves fan than it is as a White Sox fan.
It's baseball. Braves are playing better baseball.
It's baseball purgatory is what they're in.
I feel like Tim might be, I don't know, tired. He seems kind of stagnant right now in his progress, too. This is, you know, a month longer season than he's played at this point.
Has he done enough? Maybe Mao or someone would be able to answer this better than any of us, but has he done enough to prove that he can be a shortstop long term?
At the risk of speaking for Mao in a way that he disagrees with, at which point, you know, screw him. At this point, he's not questioning that Tim can stick it short, that he showed the ability to, you know, really use his athleticism in a, you know, positive way, and has showed a more impressive arm than even what was originally thought for him, or is at least doing a lot better job of throwing in motion towards the bag to kind of make his arm play up a bit more. He's liked what he's seen. Tim is a shortstop.
My very untrained eye agrees. I think he's fine. I don't have any more questions. And I saw a lot of stuff in spring where I thought, and a lot of them I think probably were just mental mistakes, but I saw a lot of stuff that made him look very uncomfortable there. I really haven't seen a ton of that. Occasional mistake, and that's it.
The whole taking his foot off the bag really early shit needs to stop, but he's done that like twice.
And he's got that, you know, his arm going away from the base has actually been incredibly impressive. He's made some really great throws that way.
Yeah, though that is something you not want to do all the time.
For sure. Considering people refer to that as a Jeter play, and Jeter was pretty much a bad shortstop for most of his career.
Though not for reasons that should trouble Tim, at least for the next 5 years.
No, that might take a while.
I hope he stops doing that, like, pull his foot away too much on double plays, because, I don't know, people tend to remember that type of stuff way too much. Like, every time Alexei, like, avoided contact, was just burned in everyone's memory and convinced that he's some softy who can't play the sport. When instead he can't play the sport now, nah, because he's old and all of his athleticism is gone. When are the Rays playing him right now? Are they, like, sticking him in right field like the Padres were?
Alexei?
I don't even know.
Hit a big homer the other day.
That's got to be his only home run with that team.
It is. it's actually... Oh, he's 6-for-27 since he joined Tampa.
He's been all shortstop, second base.
He turned 35 yesterday.
He's toast. He's not... He's getting maybe like a NRI next spring, right? Probably somewhere, if that.
Yeah, 35-year-old shortstop that aren't like legacy guys.
I mean, Willie Bloomquist had a job for fucking ever.
Fangraphs caveats aside, -2 wins is not great.
Willie Bloomquist played last year at the age of 37. And he was terrible for basically his entire career.
He played multiple positions and was basically a zero-win player almost every single year, wasn't he?
Yeah, he has 1.8 career WAR in 14 seasons.
Yeah, he's like the replacement player.
Yes. There's no more replacement player-y replacement player than Willie Bloomquist.
Is he available in free agency?
Yeah.
Or the White Sox?
I mean, he's kind of remarkable if you go by his year-by-year WAR totals.
It really, really is.
It just hovers basically at zero. Like, if you take any 2 years, it averages out to zero.
The highest he ever got was 1.1. This is by a baseball reference, and the lowest he ever got was -1. And those were in back-to-back seasons. Oh, Willie Bloomquist. Anyway, what were we talking about?
I don't know.
Dead.
Carlos Rodon's big transformation has kind of hit this kid's last two starts. We're talking about things I've observed.
He's a 151 innings this season.
Are you suggesting he's overworked?
I'm not suggesting he's overworked. I'm just wondering if... I don't know. That's probably the most innings he's ever thrown in his career, right?
You're just asking questions?
I'm just asking questions. I'm contributing a lot. Is it?
Yeah.
He's tired? I haven't watched that closely over the last month, I'll be honest. That's why I'm
very possibly tired. You know, it's not like something that our colleague Mauro Rubio would say is that, you know, Sale and Quintana have some of the smoother mechanics around, that they really are very low impact on their legs, which is very critical for maintaining strength throughout the year. And Rodon is not, definitely was very far from model citizen when he broke in last season. And, you know, is definitely not a finished product in that regard. So it's possibly getting tiring out. He should be like a big, thickly built guy that you expect to have endurance. But I don't know. I was really hoping that he would finish off strong and we could be very solid with him about what he's going to be next season. But it sounds like it looks like it's going to be a more nebulous concept of what we can expect from him going forward.
He's definitely thrown five more innings this year so far than he did last season between the levels. So I wouldn't put too much into that. He's tired out with the last two starts. I'm sure it can play. Every season's not the same, but it's not like it's a huge leap in his workload or anything.
That's true. I wasn't looking at his minor league workload from last year.
Wasn't working very hard.
I mean, he threw 139 innings for the Sox last year. So, and then he had 10 innings in minor league. So, yeah, not that huge a difference.
I mean, major leagues obviously offer more high stress innings, I guess I would say, which could be a factor.
His walk numbers are what has impressed me so much this year. Like, that seems like that's all we said last season and all we said over the offseason was, you know, he can just find some control a little bit better. And it's like his strikeout rate is basically the same, but he practically cut his walk rate in half this season.
Yeah, I expected to look for in his starts like a Contreras-esque tell of you can just look at how many walks he had and know if he had a good game or not. But that didn't really play out for the bulk of the season until that stretch that he had that was really good.
Yeah, and I mean, at the same time, he's getting hit a little bit more because of that, but, like...
He definitely has not dodged the league-wide home run spike.
No, he has not.
I mean, I don't know. I think the way he looked in the second half and the incorporation of the changeup are kind of positive steps, and he's still very young. But the White Sox are so hard up for kind of like needing these certain heavy producers to kind of drag what are going to be inevitable holes on the roster that they can't really have a guy go on a normal development path and not, you know, lose value there in a way that they fail to make up for in other areas. So there's an undue level of angst on Rodon to develop quickly because they always need people to develop quickly.
But you're definitely more confident in him going into next season and being a reliable number three than you were this season.
And I mean, he finished 2015 very encouragingly. I mean, he had a huge long streak of quality starts that he finished 2015 with that he won't finish this year with. He's gotten freaking tagged by the Twins?
Yeah.
All the White Sox need is like Carlos Sanchez to become like Brian Dozier overnight. Sanchez probably has better minor league stats.
Twins probably have to trade him this offseason, don't they? Or maybe have to is the wrong word for that. They should.
Why? Because it would make us happy?
Because he's going to be a second baseman hitting the age of 30, where his trade value has never been higher, and they're years away from contention.
I mean, it kind of depends on who they hire and what they're going to do, but they... Dozier was the guy that they didn't add any years to his contract. They just gave him a raise.
Yeah, he's, yeah, he makes $6 million next year, $9 million in 18, and then he's a free agent. So he's very valuable.
So I guess what they wound up doing is smart, because they just bought out his arbitration, but they didn't buy a free agency the year. But they wound up saving money because this happened.
He's going to be a freaking 7-win player this year.
I mean, that happens when you hit 42 bombs.
Yeah, it does.
In the middle infield.
He was hitting like 198 in like the end of May.
I can't believe that my mocking of Brian Dozier's non-extension extension has come back to bite me. Good thing there's still the Phil Hughes contract that I can properly make fun of.
Hell yeah.
So he just got hurt, so now it's... I was sad, right, instead of, like, fully right.
It sounds like they might end up hiring the that Cubs assistant GM, I think, as their GM. McLeod,
yeah. I mean, that's a guy that everyone has wanted for a while. Is more just, like, where he was going to decide that he actually wanted to go and accept a gig.
Yeah.
I don't know why Twins is the one, but, you know, maybe he loves Byron Buxton.
I think it's because they have...
As much as our new editor-in-chief.
I mean, they've got a they've got probably a better young core than the Cubs had, right?
No, what are you doing?
Sorry, am I turning into Ethan right now?
This is Ethan territory.
Well, let's move on.
So, Juan Minaya, he's a hot prospect.
A big call-up.
Yeah. I don't think Minaya's... I mean, I suppose he could be the seventh guy in the rest of the bullpen next year. He got called up over the guy that I'm basically hoping like is pitching high-leverage innings next April. But, you know, Zach Birdie had nearly thrown 70 innings already between college and pro, so I suppose they had reason enough. That was a pick. I was very worried that they had possibly done for the verboten reason of thinking that they could get immediate help. But they tanked so hard that it wound up not being something we had to have any ethical conflict about. So the fact that like at the time Birdie was ready, like his help was irrelevant.
It's really funny to think back to late off season last year when we had people screaming at us, or at least I had people screaming at me about how they shouldn't sign, like...
People hate you, man.
Fowler or whatever, because you didn't want to give up the 26th pick in the freaking draft that they used to draft a potential middle reliever. Maybe a back-end bullpen guy. You can't sign...
I'd say he's a potential high-leverage reliever. I think...
Sure.
People, but yeah, the idea like we have to shift around organizational plans so you can draft Zach Birdie is a little,
yeah,
a little silly.
People do hate me though. You're right. I get a lot of anger.
This site in general has rubbed people the wrong way, in a way I don't think was anticipated by baseball perspectives overlords. But you in particular get random people in your mentions yelling at you.
Oh man. It all started last year after the Yordano fight. Royals fans just started attacking me. This year,
I think about our dear friend Yordano.
The other day, I had Red Sox fans attacking me for saying that Rick Porcello shouldn't win the Cy Young, which maybe he should now. I don't freaking know. But anyway,
the numbers are solid. Except for the whole part about not striking people out very much.
Yeah, they're good. Fuck him. I'm on record.
It's funny that Nick was talking about that the Porcello extension may have been a big factor in getting Sherrington fired. That he's going to win Cy Young the year after.
That's true.
Baseball Reference says his nickname is Pretty Ricky. This is news to me.
I feel like that was probably more popular when Rick Porcello was first breaking into the league, I don't know, 15 years ago when he was like 12 or whatever. But
he is a lot younger than I realize.
It's funny that Sherrington has a World Series ring and traded for the Cy Young and unanimous first opinion, a bad GM.
Yeah.
Of course, Kenny Williams is a World Series ring too, so. Takes all kinds.
All right.
Have we run out of things to talk about?
I mean, the long pauses are, interesting.
I think this thing has run its course.
We're closing in on 3 a.m. Jim time.
This is true. I'm a little tired. I could read more James Baldwin if you want.
I think that's a new highlight of the Catford Speaks is when he read James Baldwin on air.
It's really a fan.
People listen to this
audio
podcast. Why do people listen to this podcast?
We have like a solid core of people who like love everything we do, and they're alone in the world.
Yeah. Talking to you, listeners.
I think they explain like our appeal to other people and possibly lose friends and family members.
If you listen to this podcast, tweet at the site account. I want to know who you are. Just say, hey, I listened. I heard you say that. I listened to this.
I was going to say what you're in prison for.
Robbing a... Never mind.
Oh, boy.
I don't even want to know what you're about to do.
I already know.
Well, let's put a topper on that old pizza pie and wrap this one up.
All right.